Lekas Yimid Rama Batigra. That's the idea. We are on Yud Zayin Amud Aleph 17:8. We are at the two dots, B'mai Kemiflagi. Yesterday we introduced a set of two comments from Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. Theoretically, those two comments could have existed side by side, but our Gemara is going to assume, as Tosfos notes, that it's actually a machlokes between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Shmuel made the statement that you always had to do shechita if you wanted to eat meat, and that besar taiva, meat that you eat just for fun, as opposed to a carbon, became permitted when they entered Eretz Yisrael. And Alan asked the question about the slav. We're going to get to the slav today. Rabbi Akiva made the statement that besar taiva was always permitted. You were always allowed to eat whatever you wanted. Besar nechira became prohibited when they entered Israel. There was never any requirement for shechita. So in other words, let me state it a little bit differently. Rabbi Yishmael's point was the transition when you entered Israel was that you were allowed to eat meat for fun. That's what happens when you enter Israel. Rabbi Akiva says the transition when you enter Israel is that shechita is required. Now, those two statements could exist side by side. Theoretically, Rabbi Yishmael could say meat for fun became permitted when they entered Israel, and shechita became required when they entered Israel. However, Tosfos points out that the Gemara is going to assume that they're contradicting each other because Rabbi Akiva couldn't possibly accept Rabbi Yishmael's statement. If Rabbi Akiva were to say his own statement, that Besar Nechira became prohibited when they entered Israel, that Yishchita became required when you entered Israel, he couldn't accept Rabbi Yishmael's comment as well, that Nechira was always prohibited. Rabbi Akiva can't accept Rabbi Yishmael. That's the way that it works in Tosfos. Tosfos Diba Maskal Rabbi Akiva is where he walks you through it. He says, "Ilu Rabbi Akiva mitzer besar taiva." If according to Rabbi Akiva, meat for fun became prohibited, imken hechi hutrolem besar nechira. Then the question would be, when was it that besar nechira was permitted? Because it can't be for a carbon. No one is going to say that besar nechira was permitted for a carbon. Carbon always was shechita. The Torah says so explicitly. So if Rabbi Akiva accepts Rabbi Yishmael, then he'll never have a case in which nechira is permitted. And Rabbi Akiva said it was permitted before they entered Eretz Yisrael. You follow what I'm saying? I'm getting a lot of blank looks.
But they both agree that shechita could only be used regarding karbanos.
Correct. That shechita was a requirement for karbanos before they entered Eretz Yisrael. Right. Or shechita was the only method for bringing a carbon. Let's say it that way.
They forbid it. We learned that they were allowed to partake of the meat.
Yeah.
At what point did we say, according to that day, that...
Right. Sinai. Sinai would be
Sinai
the assumption.
Was the injunction.
Yeah.
Or when they built the
Mishkan. I would say Sinai or Parsha Shmini. Would be your opportunities for that.
If Rabbi Akiva accepted Rabbi Shmuel's statement, then why would he have to specify Nechira?
If Rabbi Akiva Rabbi Akiva can't accept Rabbi Shmuel's statement.
Right, so why would he have to limit it to just the issue of Nechira?
Well, not just that. Right, there's no such thing as Besar Nechira then. Because according to Rabbi Shmuel, there is no Besar Taiva, and you can't do Nechira for a carbon. So what is Nechira? When is Nechira going to be used? That's Tosfos' point. Okay. So the Gemara goes forward with the assumption that Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva disagree. Then, my kemiflagi, what is their machlokes? Rabbi Akiva sabar besar taiva lo itzar klal. Rabbi Akiva's belief is that you could always eat whatever you wanted. Rabbi Shmuel sabar besar nechira lo ishtri klal. And Rabbi Shmuel says that shechita was always a requirement. You could never kill an animal with nechira and eat it. There was no such thing. That's the idea. Rashi asks, within the view of Rabbi Shmuel, that nechira was always prohibited, then why does Vezavachta teach me about shechita? Right? If you always had to shecht, what does that mean? When you enter Eretz Yisrael, Vezavachta, what is it talking about? He gives three answers.
If Rabbi Shmuel was the Nechira Asura, so why is it going to be Mutar in Eretz Yisrael?
It's not. Nechira will never become permitted. Everybody agrees Nechira is Asur once you enter. Rabbi Yishmael says Nechira was always prohibited. They were shechting in the midbar. Whenever they had to have meat, it was a carbon and it was shechita. So Rashi says, then what do you need Vizavachta for? So he gives you a few answers. One answer is that Vizavachta was to teach me that you do Shechita of Psulei HaMukdashin, carbonos that became invalid. That's what Vizavachta was for, even though it's not a kosher carbon, that that you can do Zvicha there. Another answer is it was to prohibit Shechtei Chulin Ba'azara. Rashi gives you a few answers. So the Gemara, though, is going to challenge each side, Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. It brings four arguments. If you are Rabbi Yishmael, so I understand the Pasuk says, Veshachad is ben habakar, you shall shecht the ben habakar. This is regarding Karbanos. So Rabbi Yishmael is the one who said that Nechira was always prohibited, as proven by the fact that the Pasuk says, when you bring your carbon, shecht it. And this is in the Midbar. This is not about entering Eretz Yisrael. So you see Shechita in the Midbar. El Rabbi Akiva, my Veshachat. What will Rabbi Akiva do with Veshachat? To which Rabbi Akiva will answer, as we've already commented, Kad Shem Shani. That's different because it's a carbon. Everybody agrees that you're doing Shechita for carbonos. No one thinks you're doing Nechira for carbonos. So that's not support for Rabbi Yishmael, because Rabbi Akiva says, I believe in that. When I said to you that Nechira was permitted in the Midbar, I didn't mean for Karbanos. So a second source, this one also supporting Rabbi Yishmael. Bishlam al Rabbi Yishmael, Hainu Dechsev Hatzonu Bakar Yishachet Lohem. When the Jews say they want meat, and Moshe goes back to Hashem, and Hashem says, okay, fine, no problem, I can provide that. Moshe says, where in the world are you going to get that? Are you going to shecht, tzon, and bakar? So who invented the word shechita? According to you, Rabbi Akiva, there was no such thing as shechita then. For karbanos there's shechita, but there's no shechita for the meat you're going to eat. So why did you say, hatzon bakar, yishachet lahem? El, Rabbi Akiva, my hatzon bakar yishachet lahem. What does that mean? Yinacher lahem bi-violation. He said, yinacher, not yishachet. So his answer is, Nechira Shalem, Zoe Shechita Son. Yeah, that's what he meant. When it said Shechita, that actually meant Nechira. This is the regarding the slug. So here I'll answer Alan's question. The Marsha here, and in Yuma, Dafai, and Hayim, and Beis, indicates that it doubts exactly the point. This was their Avera. Their Avera in requesting meat was that Basar Taiva was Usser. And therefore, by eating it, they're violating the rule that Basar Taiva is Osir. That's the way to understand the Chait. And he says, you see it in the way they complained. They had two complaints. One was, Mi Yachilenu Basar, who will give us meat? Because we're not allowed to have meat for fun. And Zachainu Asar Daga, we remember also the Daga. And Moshe's dialogue with Hashem is on two levels. Moshe says to Hashem, Hatzonu Bakar Yishachay Lahem, Imes Kol Degei Hayam Yeyasef Lahem. He answers on both points, the meat and the fish. The fish you didn't have because you're in the middle of a midbar. The meat you didn't have because the meat was off limits, the meat was lesser. So they're two different complaints, and Moshe responds on two levels, and then they get punished. It's specifically for the meat. Habasaro denu ben shinehem. They get punished for biting into the meat because Basar Taiva was lesser. So that's exactly the point.
Why would Hashem give them this love like it was lesser anyway?
Why did Hashem give them gold if they were going to use it to make an eagle? No, seriously, that's Moshe's complaint. In Brachos, was it Lamed Gimel? Moshe says to Hashem, V'dizahav, why did you give them gold? You knew what was going to happen. They're going to misuse it. Now, granted, this is a little more explicit, because they said, we want meat to eat, and Hashem said, okay, here. But the answer is that they've already sinned by asking for it. The Avera is already over. Now this is just the delivery mechanism for the punishment. Their Avera is already in. That would be the answer, so it would appear.
It's not much, but also the other portion in terms of what the Avera was.
Right, because the other portion aren't working in the context of the Gemara Chulin. They're just trying to figure out what's going on. So we say, all right, if your name is Rabbi Yishmael, then you're okay with the following quote. Again, Rabbi Yishmael says that they're only allowed to eat meat for fun when they enter Israel, and Shechita always went on. So I understand why we say that if a person does Nechira, these other ones are, you shecht and it's invalid, or Ma'akir, you uproot the simanim instead of slicing them. But the point for us is Nochir. If a person does Nechira, he does not do Kisui Adam. So that makes sense, because Rabbi Yishmael says Nechira never permitted the meat for eating. Nechira was never a method of kosher slaughter. El Rabbi Akiva, I patur lochem milachasos, but Rabbi Akiva believes that Nechira was used in the Midbar. So according to Rabbi Akiva, why is it that you don't do Kisui Adam for the aftermath of Nechira? To which his answer is, Hol v'itzer itzer, because Nechira is no longer a kosher method of Shechita, of executing an animal, therefore, you don't do Kisui Adam. But in the Midbar, theoretically, yeah, you would have done Kisui Adam after Nechira. They then bring a fourth source. This one is in support of Rabbi Akiva. Bishlamal Rabbi Akiva, Damar Besar Taiva, Lo Itzer Klal. Rabbi Akiva says they were always allowed to eat Besar Taiva. Hainu Dichsiv, Ah, Kasher Yechelas Hatzives HaYol, Kein Etochalenu. The Torah says regarding the Shlamim, just like you eat a deer, just like you eat a heart, so you may eat the meat of the Shlamim. So wait a minute. How can you tell me that? In the Midbar, according to you, Rabbi Ishmael, you can't eat those things. There is no Besar Taiva. And you're not bringing a deer as a carbon. There's no such thing. Ela bishmal, tzivayel gufemi avishari. You're telling me you may eat the shlamim the way you eat the deer in the heart, but they're not eating the deer in the heart. So which the answer is, ki asa rachmana behema dechazil akrava. Avachayil lochazil akrava loasa rachmana. You're right. We have to tailor Rabbi Yishmael's comment. Rabbi Yishmael's comment was not that you can't eat Besar Taiva at all. Besar Taiva was permitted in the Midbar from non-carbon creatures. It was only the carbon eligible animals that had to be eaten as carbonos. So we modify his view. So Rabbi Yishmael is going to say that it was shechita. Yeah. Okay. Boy, Rabbi Yirmiya. Rabbi Yirmiya now asks me a new question, but still within this discussion. Avrei b'sar nechira shechnisu Yisrael imayin la'aretz mahu. What about the meat that the Jews brought into Eretz Yisrael? If you had meat, this is within Rabbi Akiva's view, right? You had meat that underwent nechira in the Midbar, and you brought it into Israel. So what's its status, right? This is very important. I've got it sitting in my freezer still. So what's the rule? We're going to come back to why he's asking the question in a moment. Amos, the Gemara asks, well, when are you at? What are you talking about? Elim of Hashemesh Akimshu, if you're talking about during the 7 years of conquest, Hash to Dabar Tamei Ishtri Lehu, Dichsiv Avotim Malayim Kol Tuv, as it is, they're allowed to eat treif, out and out treif, when they're in the 7 years of conquest. As the Pasuk says, you are coming into a land where you are going to find houses filled with all good things that you didn't provide. And Va'am Rabbi Yirmiya Bar Abba Amarav, Kasle or Kadle de Chazir, or Kosle de Chazire, and he explains what that means is pieces of pig. You're going to find chazer there, and you're going to be allowed to eat it during your Shevesh Akivshu. The Rashash notes that the Ramban in Devarim Perek Yud Beis actually says that you're allowed to for Shevesh Achilku also against this Gemara. For the first 14 years, you're allowed to eat whatever treif you find in Eretz Yisrael. So Besar Nechira Mibaya. So of course you can eat the Besar Nechira you brought into the land. So the answer is, his question is, what about after? What about after that? You dried it out, you had beef jerky, and you dried it out, and now you kept it for 7 years, for 14 years. Your wife is yelling at you, get it out. Alternatively, or maybe it's during those original years. And and may be what was permitted was that which you found when you entered Israel. But that which was from before is not permitted. So the Gemara answers, Teiku, I don't know. Now, Maritzkiyus makes the point that this makes a lot of sense. The idea that only what the Kananim prepared will be permitted to you. Because he suggests, based on the Rambam and Hilchos Malachim, that the reason why they were allowed to eat whatever they found when they entered Israel was like Eishes Sifas Toar, Dibra Torah Keneged Yetzer Hara. The idea was, they'd have this big Yetzer Hara, and therefore the Hashem says, I'm not going to render this off limits. That only makes sense for the booty that they find from the Obdei Kochavim when they enter. Not for the McDonald's that they brought in from the Midbar. It only makes sense for that which they find, like the Eishes Sifas Toar. But speaking to the bigger question here, why are we asking this question of what the status was of meat when they entered Eretz Yisrael? Rashi asks that question. Rashi says, what in the world is this question here for? And his answer is, if you see Rashi, it's six lines down in the wide lines. He says, "V'udrosh v'kabel sacharu." This is simply a case of learn it and receive reward. Because we need to know the truth. Even though this is long gone, no one has any meat remaining. Rash says drosh v'kabel sachar. The Rash disagrees. The Rash says drosh v'kabel sachar is a principle we only apply when it comes to understanding psukim. I have a pasuk in the Torah, and I need to know what the pasuk means. Drosh v'kabel sachar, learn it and get reward for Talmud Torah. But we find many times in the Gemara, when they ask a question, and it's not about a specific meaning of a specific pasuk, the Gemara asks, Maida hava hava, what already happened, happened, why do you need to ask this question? So he says, it's not drosh v'kabel sachar, there is a practical benefit here. Why? What if you took a neder against eating certain items, but you have leftovers that you didn't leave on purpose? You have leftovers from the item already. Are you allowed to continue to eat that which you had left? Or if the Sanhedrin gets up and says, such and such a food is usher, but you have a supply of it already. Indeed, the Bnei Yisachar asks the question regarding meat left over from Shabbos during the 9 days. Are you allowed to eat the meat during the 9 days? The argument is the same thing would go here. The same way that that meat that they had from the Midbar became usher when they entered Eretz Yisrael, but they were allowed to eat the carryover, potentially, that's Rabbi Yemir's question, you would be allowed to eat the meat, potentially, from Shabbos during the 9 days. That's the argument. In practice, I think we say no regarding the 9 days meat. That's the question that they're trying to ask here, that they leave with a take. Okay. Amar Rabba, or Rava. This is now new issue. We finished discussing Rabbi Shmuel versus Rabbi Akiva. We tried to support each side. Each side was able to upschlug the sources supporting the other side. And then we asked the question about what about the meat that they brought in, and we answered Teku. So now we return to that which is more easily resolved, which is our Mishnah. Amar Rabba, or Rava. Shanisa Hakol Shochten Ul Olam Shochten. He said, we have three clauses in our Mishnah. One was Hakol Shochten, everybody shechts. We were bothered that we already knew everybody shechts. And we answered that by saying, you're right, it's talking about the animals that get shechted. We then asked about La'olam Shochten, you always shecht. And we said, what is that talking about? And we said, that's pre or post entry into Eretz Yisrael per the discussion of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. But Bakol Shochten, my Mashnisle, my Mashanisle, what will you do with the phrase Bakol Shochten, that you may use anything for Shechita? V'chi Tema, Bein Betzur, Bein Mizchuchas, Bein Mekromis Shalkana, if your point is to say, well, you're allowed to use a stone, you're allowed to use glass, you're allowed to use the edge of a reed, or certain reeds anyway. Hadumya Da'anach Ketani, he says, I don't understand. You need a parallel between the three clauses in the Mishnah, meaning Bakol Shochten, Hakol Shochten, and La'olam Shochten should all be operating on the same plane because they're brought together, and therefore Ianach B'Shochten, Hainami B'Shochten. If the first two clauses are talking about the Shochet and how you do an act of Shechita, then it makes sense that the latter clause is also talking about how you do Shechita. V'yanach ben Yishchaten, but if the others are regarding the Shechted entity, Hainami ben Yishchaten, then this should be as well. He's arguing for parallel structure in the Mishnah. And his problem is, Hakol Shochten, you said, referred to the animal being Shechted, right? B'la'olam Shochten, And the clause of Bakol Shochtim was about the Shochet and the act of Shechita that he's doing, right? The implement that he's going to use. El Amar Rava, so Rava says, forget everything we learned. He says, all that stuff that we learned about Hakol Shochtim includes that the birds get Shechted, or he says, no, that's not the way to take it. This is the way to take our Mishnah. Hakol Shochtim means the Shochet. We had two sources that said Hakol Shochten. One was to include the Kuti, who I would have thought to disqualify, as we discussed. And one is to include the Yisrael Mumar, who I would have thought to disqualify as well, as we already discussed. The La'olam Shochten doesn't mean in what era. He says, Bein Bayom, Bein Balayla. The point is, you can shecht by day, or you can shecht at night, assuming that you have an avuka, that you have the fire by which you can see. The Bein Barosh HaGag, Bein Barosh HaSfina, whether on the top of the roof or on the top of a boat, it's fine. We're not concerned about Avodah Zarah, as the Gemara talks about separately. And then Bakol Shochten, you can shecht with any implement, Bein Bitzur, Bein Bizchuchet, Bein Bekromis Shalkana, with a rock, with a piece of glass, with a reed, all of those are okay. So the entire Mishnah is about the act of Shechita. Now, not about the Nishchat, but about the Shochet. Good. The Gemara now moves over to talk about knives with a pagam, knives that have flaws in them. And we said that you can't shecht with a knife with a flaw. And among the ones that we list was the magal katzir, the sickle, and the megera, the saw. So Avud Shmuel, pagam b'shadar, pagam b'shadar. Avud Shmuel, Shmuel's father, remember, was a doctor, but evidently he was a shochet as well. Hopefully he didn't confuse the two. That's what I'm saying. I wouldn't want to insure him. So Avuah d'Shmuel wants to know what exactly is a pagam that's a problem. So he takes knives, he puts different flaws in them of different sizes and angles or whatever, Rashi gives it to you in greater depth, and he sends them off to the experts to say, is this a pagam? Is this a pagam? And he wants to have a model. That's what he wants to do. So shalchulei kimegera shaninu. So they answered him. What we learned is if it's like a saw, Rashi says what that means is that they have the same depth and they have two hooks, as the way I like to think of it. What happens is, when you have a flaw in the knife, it isn't simply that the blade dips down at one point, but that the edges of the flaw actually are a little jagged on each side of the flaw. And therefore, it's going to catch the neck of the trachea and the esophagus of the entity being shechted. And the way we're going to explain it is that the first time it catches, it weakens the vessel, and the second time it's actually going to tear at it. So that's our specific concern, is having a flaw with hooks on each side. I mean it's in the blade, but it's catching it like a fisher would catch it, right? That's the idea. That's our concern. That's what they told him. Tanu Rabbanan, the Braisa is going to continue with that. Well, that's the next piece. Hang on to the next piece in the Gemara. You'll see why he says that. He didn't say it because of what we saw here. He saw it because of what's coming next. But the point that he's making here, Rashi makes two points. One is about the even depth of it. That the Gemara is not going to pick up on. The Gemara is going to pick up on this point about the edges. Satana Rabbanan, the Braisa says, Sakin Sheishma Pekimos Harbe Tidon Kimagera. If you have a knife with many flaws in it, we treat it like the Megera, which is to say, it's going to be puzzle. It's a saw. And therefore, the point for us is that it's disqualified even if the flaws do not have hooks on each side. Even if the hook is only on one side. V'she'in ba'ala pekima achas, we're on the second line on Yitzayin Amud Beis, v'she'in ba'ala pekima achas, if it only has one flaw, then ogeres psula misuchseches kishera. Then if it's ogeres means that it has the hook on each side of the flaw to catch it, then it's no good. But if it only has one flaw, and it's misuchseches, which means, as we'll see, that it only has a hook on one end of it, then kshera, then you can shecht with it and it will be kosher. So if it's multiple flaws, no good, even if it's only jagged on one end. If it's one flaw, then it's possible only if it's jagged on both ends of the flaw. And the Gemara walks us through that now. Hechi dami ogeres, hechi dami misuchseches. What is ogeres? What is misuchseches? So Amar Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbi Elazar, ogeres mishtei ruchos. Misuchseches miruach achas. Ogeres is where it catches on both ends of the flaw. Misuchseches is where it will catch only on one end. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Why is it any different whether it's on one end or on both ends? Is your point that when it has a hook on both sides of the flaw, then the first point is going to weaken the trachea, the esophagus, and the second point is going to tear it? The same thing is going to be true when it's on one side. It's still being cut by the edge of the knife. That's going to weaken the trachea and the esophagus. And when it hits the first jagged point, that's going to tear it. So his answer is the kamaresha de sakina. It's where the flaw is at the start of the blade, and therefore there is no chance for the trachea, the esophagus, to be weakened before it hits the flaw. To which he says, so ki azla machla shaki asa baza. Still, you go back and forth over it, and you're going back and forth of it, then it's going to have a chance to be weakened before it gets torn. So the answer is, like you talked about yesterday, the idea of the blade, that's a long blade, you don't need to go back and forth, so therefore there won't be this two-directional, this bi-directional cut. Amar Rava, we still didn't get back to Matal's point about the checking it with the nail. That's coming in another few lines. But Amar Rava, Rava first says, Gimel Midos Pesakin. He says there are three different types of blade. Number one is Ogeres, the one where you have jagged edges on both sides of the flaw. Lo Yishchot, don't shecht with that. Vimshachat Shchita So Psula, and if you did, the Shchita is no good. Second is Misuchseches, where it's jagged on one end of the Pagam. Yam of the floor. Lo yishchob balachatchila. Don't do it lachatchila. V'mshachat shchita asokshera. But if you did it, the shchita is going to be kosher. That's going to be okay, assuming holich v'lo hevi. That's what we're going to say in the Gemara. So don't assume that we're dropping that. Ole v'yored besakin shochet balachatchila. If you have a knife that has a sloped blade, so that it's curved, but there's no flaw. There's nothing jagged there that's going to catch anything. It's just that the blade itself is uneven. You can't really shecht with a crooked one like I'm describing, but the idea is it's on a slant. So he says, that's 100% kosher. We're okay. Amale Ravuna, braid Rav Nechemia Rav Ashi.
Problem, but you smoothed it out.
That's probably how you got that way, on a guess, but it doesn't have to be. Well, he gives you an example of how it could have happened. He says, Kigon. Right. That would be one way in which your knife got that way. So, Amale Rav Huna, braid Rav Nechemia Rav Ashi, which is important because it allows you to fix things. You don't have to throw the knife out now that you have a pagam. It's okay. Just smooth it out, then it'll just be an uneven blade. Amale Rav Huna, braid Rav Nechemia Rav Ashi. So, Rav Huna, braid Rav Nechemia says to Rav Ashi, Amar lo mishmei de Rava, mesuchseches psula. You told us in the name of Rava that mesuchseches is no good. Even b'di'evit. How could you tell me here that b'di'evit is kosher? The Vaha, either Omar Rava or Vatanya, mesuchseches kishera. Which is it? Lo kasha, that's no problem. Kancholach v'hevi, kancholach v'lohevi. It depends on whether it was in the beginning of the thing and you went back and forth on it or not. Really, this point does not require that it be in the beginning of the blade. Here he just makes the holach v'hevi point. So Tosfos says, you could have also answered beginning of the blade. Amale Ravacha, breder of Avia, le Ravashi. Damiel is sasa amai. Ravacha, breder of Avia, asked Ravashi, what about if it's like sasa? Sasa is part of the grain. It's rough. And the question is, there are no nicks in your blade. There are no jagged edges. It's just a rough blade. So is it going to be kosher? Mai. So Amar Lei, man yoev lami bisrei v'achlinon. He said, if anybody would give me of the meat from that, I would eat it. It's kosher, kosher, kosher. The Margalios HaShas has a nice piece on why he's so emphatic about this. But we got to go weiter here.
Sasa also brew. That's why it's hard, like a hard thing.
You're talking about Besasa, Bashal Khatarivana and Aim Say the Rebbe, right? The maid when they're asking that question. Yeah, I think she has that discussion. But yeah, the literal meaning is regarding the blade. Yeah. It's regarding the grain. Right.
Hard stuff, so it's like a broom, right?
Yeah. I mean it's rough.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, but there is a... Remember the discussion in the Gemara where Rebbe's maid translates a whole bunch of words for them by using them in sentences as the Tamid that are walking in? And one of them is B'sasa, because the Pasuk is B'sasa, B'shal Chatribena, they don't know what it means. And she's the one who explains it for them. And one of her words that she translates is broom. I didn't remember that it was this one, but it could be. Okay. Amar Chista, now we get to how you check a knife. This is a lot of fun. The Amar Chista, minayin lebedika sakim in Torah. First of all, Chista says, how do you know to check a knife in the first place from the Torah? Shnamar, well, we quote a pasuk in Shmuel Aleph. Rav Yaakov Emden notes that we're using a pasuk in Navi and calling it min haTorah. We're comfortable with that. Shnamar, the pasuk says, ushkatetem bazeh v'achaltem. Shaul gives them a knife. This is when they're eating al hadam. We discussed that back in Zvachim, what the story was. But he says, you shall shecht with this, and you shall eat. So the idea is, he checked the knife, and he gave it to them, and said, that's what you eat. So the Gemara says, pshita, what do you need a pasuk for? Of course you have to check your knife. That's like saying that you have to keep the matzah from becoming chametz. It's integral to the law. Kevin dechinakav trefa baya bediga. Since if you make a hole in the thing in the trachea of the esophagus, then it's no good. Obviously, you have to check it. What else are you going to do? So the answer is lachacham kamrina. No, our point was: do you have to show it to a chacham? That's what we're drawing from the pasuk. Just like Shaul has to be the one to approve the knife. So the Gemara says, "V'hamar Rabbi Yochanan lo amru lahara sakim lachacham alavnei kvodosh lachacham." But doesn't Rabbi Yochanan say the only reason to show it to the chacham is to show proper cover to the chacham, not a pasuk? So the answer is midrabanan. Ukras machta bi'almahu. You're right. The concept is a derabanan concept, and it's just an asmachta that they show you. Look, Shaul gave them a knife to use. Rabbi Yosef Weiss was my rebbe for Yerideya, so he made the point on this Gemara. Kavod chacham is de'oraisa. Kavod Chacham is not a Derabbanan. Kavod Chacham is a Deoraisa. The Derabbanan is this iteration of it, saying, and by the way, we manifest it here regarding checking the knife. It's similar to the point that the Aruch HaShulchan makes regarding Mukta, that Mukta comes from biblical principles, but the Chachamim are the ones who defined where it actually applies, how you carry it out. You find that also in a few other cases in Hilchos Shabbos. Okay. The Ma'arav of Badki La Bashimsha. In Eretz Yisrael, they checked it using the sun. Rashi offers two explanations. Either that means that you looked at the blade in the light to see whether it was smooth, or alternatively, you looked at the shadow. Because your shadow is elongated, and therefore it's easier to pick up on the flaw. The flaw itself will be magnified when you look at it. If you hold it at the right angle, it'll be easier to see in the shadow. Bin Erda Badkula B'maya. In Erda, they used water, and Rashi again offers two explanations. Either you ran a flaw of water, you put the blade underneath it, and you looked for a disturbance coming from a flaw. Or alternatively, you took a drop of water and you put it on the blade and let it run from one end to the other, and if it catches, then that means you have a flaw. Rav Sheshes, Badik Labarish Lishne. Rav Sheshes used the end of his tongue. You know why Rav Sheshes has to use the end of his tongue? Because he's blind. Right. The author of Megillas Hayam says he has no choice. He's blind, so this is how he has to do it. The author of the Sichas Chulin, I'm told, when he was here and did his demonstration on the various things, mentioned that you don't try this anymore. You could check with your tongue when they didn't have steel, because your blade had to be much thicker. Once you introduce steel, you're able to make the blade a lot thinner, and it's like a razor blade. And then you check it on the Shochet's tongue, the only flaw you're going to find is in the tongue.
I had a roommate in Yeshiva, and he had the long one for the gusses, and he did it in like
wow. Like okay, do not try this. No, bad idea. Get a Shochet who can see. Okay, Mevacha Rayakov Badak LaBechud Asara. Rav Acha Bar Yaakov checked it using a hair. Apparently, you would run the hair along the blade to see if it caught. That's the only explanation I can find for what he was doing with that. Bisura Amri, Bisra Achla, Bisra Livtika. In Surah, they said a very logical thing. They said, look, your point is it going to catch on the trachea and the esophagus, right? It literally eats meat. So therefore, use meat to see. If it gets caught when you run it over meat, then it is. All these other standards aren't really relevant to reality. The reality is, will it get caught when it's slicing the trachea of the esophagus? Amar of Papa Tzricha Bedika Abisra VeAtufra, and then we have here VeAtzlasa Ruchsi. In addition, VeAtrei Gisni, he says you check it with the flesh of your finger and your fingernail. You use both. Tosfos points out, the Rush points out, the finger is for the esophagus, which is soft. The nail is for the trachea, which is tougher. But you're checking it on your finger and your fingernail, and you're checking it on the blade as the blade point, as well as the sides. You're checking it on the sides of the edge as well. So the Gemara is not so clear on this business about the sides. Why am I checking it along the sides? In other words, you have your point, like the bottom here, and then you also have the edges that are right near it. If anyone hasn't seen a shechita knife, by the way, I don't have one to bring in, but just remember, a shechita knife is a rectangle. If those who have seen it know what I'm talking about. A shechita knife is not like your knives that you have at home that curves up, the blade curves up, although we did say all of the yarit is okay. But generally speaking, it's like this. This is your shechita knife that you're actually using. This is short. You use this for a bird. And you just go like that, across it. Sorry? Like a ruler. Right. But that's what we're, just if you need to envision it, it's important to remember that. Okay, so he says you're checking it on the edge, along the edge, as well as the sides of the edge. So that actually becomes controversial, this point about the sides of the edge. We're right after the parentheses. Amar le Ravina le Ravashi. Ravina says to Ravashi, Amar lan Rav Sama Breid Rav Misharshi on Mishmach. Rav Sama Breid Rav Misharshi has said to us, in your name, Ravashi, De Amrit le Mishmei de Rava. He said, Ravashi told me in the name of Rava, Tzricha Bedika Abisra Vatufra, you have to check it on the finger and on the nail, the flesh of the finger as well as the nail, and on the three sides, the point of the edge of the blade, as well as the sides approaching the edge. So Amar Lei, Ravashi replied, Abisra Vatufra Amri, I did say the part about the flesh and the nail, lo Amri, but I didn't say anything about the three sides. Iga de Amri, alternate version, Abisra Vatufra Vatlasa Ruchsi Amri, I said the business about the three sides, Mishmei de Rava lo Amri. What I never said was that Rava said this, I was making it up, I was quoting somebody else, but I wasn't. That's it on that one. Ravina of Rav Acha Breid de Rava, Havu Yasvi Kamei de Rav Ashi. Ravina and Rav Acha are sitting in front of Rav Ashi. Aisu sakin the kameid Rav Ashi lebodka. They bring Rav Ashi a knife to check. Amar leil Rav Acha breid Rav bidka. He turns to Rav Acha breid Rav and he says, "You check it." He wants to see how he's going to. He's checking the checker. The bodka tuf Rav bis Rav atlas aruchsa. He checks it using this method on all three parts. Amar leil yasher. And he said, "That's good. That's the way to do it." V'chein Amar Rav Kahana. And so says Rav Kahana that this is what you should do. So he gives him the thumbs up, so to speak, for this checking method. Rav Yemar Amar Atufra Babisra Tzricha Atlas Aruch Salo Tzricha. Rav Yemar, though, says you don't need the three sides. And why not? Because of a Gemara that we already learned a while back. Milo Amar Rabbi Zeir Amar Shmuel. Didn't Rabbi Zeir say, citing Shmuel, remember the hot knife? Libein Esakin V'shachah Bashchita Sok Shere Shachiduda Kodem Livuna. We're not worried if the knife blade is hot, because it'll get cut before it ever gets singed, because we said that it widens outward, the two sides of the cut spread outward, and not going to touch the sides of the blade. So if we said regarding a hot blade that the sides are not going to touch it, the same thing is true if the sides have a pagam, have a flaw in them, that I shouldn't be concerned. Mekashalon, we asked there, ha'ikat studin, what about the sides of the blade? Ve'amrinin, and we said, beis hashchita mirbach ravach, that the sides are going to spread outward, and therefore they're not going to touch the sides of the blade. So his answer was, hakanami, beis hashchita mirbach ravach. He said, the same thing is true here, and therefore I don't believe you need to check these sides. This comes up as a question in terms of a maker's mark. Right, the way they have maker's marks on knives, where they engrave slightly the brand, whatever. What if you had one? They don't do that on a shechita knife. Oh no, they. Sorry.
A laser.
Right. And there's a discussion about laser for shechita. It's a very interesting discussion. It won't be on the next daf. But in terms of the maker's mark question, you have this insignia in it. It would, you know, if you're going to tell me you have to check the sides, then you are concerned. If you're going to tell me that the sides don't get touched, you know, because the neck will split outward, then it's not a problem. Okay. Amar Rav Huna bar Rav Ketina, Amar Rav Shimon ben Lakish, Shalosh Pegimos Hein. He says there are three sets of halachos that involve flaws. We're going to see four, but go with three for now. Pegimas Etzim BePesach. One, the Torah says not to break a bone in the Karban Pesach, so making a flaw will do that. Pegimas Ozen BeBachor. If a Bachor has a mum, it goes to the Kohen. So the flaw in the ear is this same type of a flaw, and Pegimas Mum BeKachim, the type of a blemish that's going to disqualify a Karban. For Rechista Marach Pegimas Sakin. Rechista also included the flaw in the Shechita knife. The Idach, why didn't the others include it? Bechul Lokamairi, because they're dealing with carbon cases, carbon Pesach, Bechor, Kachim, that's why they didn't mention the Shechita knife. V'chulan pigimasen k'dei pigimas ha-mizbeach. The shear for all of them is the type of flaw that would disqualify a stone in the Mizbeach. Nu v'kama pigimas ha-mizbeach, top of Yechess. How big a flaw is that? K'dei shetachgor batziporen, such that it would catch a fingernail. The Tosfos said they didn't list the Mizbeach in the list of pigimos because the Mizbeach one is Del Reisa. When they say Avanim Shleimos Tivneh, these other ones are not. So that's the idea. He says Shadach Korban Tziborin, that it would catch a fingernail. The Rush says on this that this is the same as what we said before. This is not arguing with all the methods of checking we mentioned. The goal of all these different methods of checking is to find the pagam in which a nail would get caught. Meisveis, the Gemara says, well, wait a minute. We learned Kama Pekimas HaMizbeach. What's the shear for a flaw in the Mizbeach? Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai Omer Tefach, and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov are Kizayis. They give these humongous shearim. So the Gemara says, lo kasha, that's no problem. Habasida, habaavna. One is a flaw in the lime between the stones. That's where it's a tefach. And the other is a flaw in the stone itself. That's where it's any minimal one, because the Torah says, avanim shleimos. This is a very interesting problem, though. And this is a very, very interesting problem, because Tosfos asks, how in the world are you going to find stones that don't have any flaw, even like to catch a fingernail? Where are you going to get that? Even the Shamir didn't do that. Granted that Tosfos in Tzvachim says, based on a Gemara at the end of Sota, that the Shamir did exist in Bayacheni, but that's not what a Shamir does. A Shamir doesn't give you something smooth. All it does is it cuts a stone such that you don't lose any pieces when you cut it, and you don't have to use metal. But it doesn't help you to get a smooth one. So Tosfos suggests that they used river-eroded stones. And that way, it's smooth. But he has a problem, because the Pasuk in Malachim Aleph, Perek Vav, says, Evan Shleimah Masa Nivneh, or Nivna, that they brought whole stones that had been carved from a mountain. So if it's carved from a mountain, it's not river smooth, unless it's a mountain underneath a waterfall or underneath a stream. Maybe such a case. I don't know. But it's a big problem. How in the world did you get stones like this from the Mizbeach that didn't have even a flaw that would catch a fingernail? This is very hard to imagine. We'll pick up with that, God willing, tomorrow.